This is the Apple This Extra.
Hello and welcome to Apple Viz Extra number 56. We are recording on June 4th, 2018. Apple have just done their WWDC keynote address, a real highlight of the year for Apple fans. My name is Dave Nason and I am joined today by Thomas Domville from the Apple Viz editorial team, of course, and from the Apple Viz Unleashed podcast. Thomas, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thank you for having me.
And I'm also joined by Tyler Stephen from the Apple Viz team, and I would venture one of our Mac experts. So Tyler, good to have you.
Good to be here.
And finally, we are joined, last but not least, by Stuart Lawler. Stuart is the producer and host of the excellent NCBI Technology podcast. Thanks for joining us, Stuart.
Hi, Dave. Great to be here. Thanks for the opportunity.
Great to have you. So, WWDC today, the Worldwide Developer Conference. As I said, this is one of the two kind of big events of the year, along with the September event, usually with Apple. It was a good long presentation, over 2 hours, and kicked off with a nice video, which was kind of documentary style about developers, voiced by David Attenborough, I think it was. It sounded like him anyway. Stuart, you liked that one, didn't you, the video?
I did like it. I think as I was watching it and as it was starting off, I kind of felt it gave me a lot of hope, I think, because previous WWDCs have started off with a lot of music and I'm sure lots of great imagery, but I have no clue what's going on. So this was really great and a nice way to open the show, I think.
Yeah, no, I thought it was pretty cool. I did wonder myself, was it a hint towards some Apple TV content being shown to us later in the show? But that didn't materialize, but it was a cool introduction. And it kicked off with Tim Cook, as always, welcome us to the center. And he started with just some milestones. So Thomas, can you believe the App Store has been around for 10 years?
You know, that's exactly what I was thinking. And when he said that, I was doing a double take. I said, is it really been that long? And I had to think about it. I was like, oh my gosh, it had. And then he has some pretty staggering amount like that. What was that? 500,000 visitors per week on the App Store. I was like, wow, that is crazy.
And $100 billion of revenue to developers. And one thing, the sentence that stood out to me early in the show was Tim said, today is all about software. So very early on, we thought, okay, well, that's the hardware rumors gone. Did anyone else notice that?
Yeah, I did, Dave. And I was almost disappointed because I had read a couple of articles from, and they weren't just one source. There was a couple of sources talking about, or at least hinting about iPhones, or at least one or two iPhone refreshes coming prior to the traditional September date. And I wondered, was there going to be some hint of that on this show, but there wasn't. So yeah, it looks like we're waiting till September for everything.
Yeah, well, yeah. The rumors especially were the iPhone SE, because is it 2 years old, Tyler? I think you remember the SE.
It's about 2 years old. Yeah, it was introduced in March of 2016, and that's using the A9 chip, which is the chip used in the iPhone 6S. So it could use some attention.
Yeah, so I was a little surprised by that. But at the same time, it is a developer conference, as we pointed out, so it is ultimately a software conference. But sometimes we get a little nugget of hardware.
And that's where I feel like rumors this year were a little sketchier than usual. I mean, obviously, guessing Apple's moves at an event is sort of an industry in of itself. But it seems like this year, the hardware rumors were all over the place. Like, there were rumors about new Beats unveilings, that Apple would take time during the keynote to introduce new Beats by Dre for the 10th anniversary, to commemorate the 10th anniversary of that brand as well. That failed to materialize. And then there were some other rumors that they would introduce new Macs, MacBook Pro, an iMac, maybe a lower cost MacBook or MacBook Air, just taking the time to do some incremental improvements with the Intel 8th generation chip and other things of that, just minor updates of that nature. That failed to materialize. And the latest reports that I'm aware of are that we may see those later in the year. So I would imagine probably September or perhaps a special other event in October.
Yeah, very possibly. I even wondered, might we go you know, last year I think they did Apple TV, so would there be maybe the HomePod might get international release or something like that, but there was no mention, but we shall see what happens down the line. So onto the software it was, and of course the top billing as always goes to iOS. So Craig Federighi came on, and this is somewhere the rumors were true, I think, really, was we heard that, you know, some of the key features and overhauls of iOS that Apple are looking at haven't really been put back to iOS 13, and that iOS 12 would focus mostly on performance improvements. So for one thing, iOS 12 will be supported on all the same devices as iOS 11, which is interesting. So no device has been deprecated, which I think is a good thing, isn't it, Thomas? You know, there's a lot of people out there using older phones.
It is awesome to hear about, well, there's a couple of things mentioned about the older device. And first, that the iOS 12 will work on anything that has iOS 11 now. And I thought, oh my God, that's incredible. I mean, you're talking about 5 years worth of devices now when it comes out this fall. So we're talking, you can still use your 5S, still use your original iPad Air, iPad Mini, second generation. I mean, these are devices that have been around for a long time, and nobody else can take that claim. And my biggest favorite was to hear how he took that 6 Plus as an example. And they were seeing anywhere from 40% to 70% faster in speed. That is incredible. That's going to like be like a new phone for them.
Yeah,
that was really that jumped out at me as well. The fact that they had the 6 Plus, and you know, a phone that's been around for a while. And I, in fact, I know a couple of people who are using the 6, who'll be very happy to hear that that iOS 12 is going to run on that device.
Yeah, you think about it. Normally, you have to get a new iPhone just to get that kind of a boost. Now, you don't even have to get a new iPhone to get that boost. Yeah. Just put this iOS on, boom, you got that much faster.
Yeah, I think it's a great step. And it's probably something that needed to happen. I think a lot of people felt that they needed to slow down and just really focus on the under, you know, the performance under the hood kind of thing of iOS this year. So hopefully we'll see the benefits of that.
So basically slowing down to think about getting faster, to think about getting the performance faster.
Exactly. One of the key highlights that they talked about, I don't know if anyone here is particularly interested in AR or augmented reality, they spoke about a new file type, USDZ, and ARKit 2 to make it easier for developers to work with augmented reality. One cool feature I did like of it is that they talked about shared experience. So if you can imagine a group of school kids around a table, all looking at a certain thing, and they'll all see the same thing from their each of their perspectives, you know what I mean, that kind of thing. So that could be a cool feature, but to us, I'm not sure anyone...
I don't think that was, you know, I kind of predicted that. I kind of said AR, AR, AR. That's all they're going to be talking about. And, you know, when they did that cool measure app where you can take a measurement, and he was saying, you just take this line, you drag it to from one engine in. And I'm thinking, there is no way. There is just no way I can possibly see this accessible at all. And it's not their fault. It's just that I don't know how we could use something like that. And I really, at this time, maybe we'll get a surprise, but this was just for people with sight and eye candy stuff for them.
Yeah, I'd agree. And actually, mind you, saying that, I thought there was an interesting piece where they brought somebody up to talk about Lego and some stuff they were doing with Lego and AR. And I didn't quite understand it, but I think there was some real Lego there, and they're using AR to do all sorts of cool things.
That's the impression I got as well, yeah, that it was kind of a mix of a real Lego set and a augmented reality set in some way, which is kind of cool. And yeah, like Thomas said, that new measure app that they've got now, so maybe some of the low vision users though will be able to use it, and hopefully it'll, you know, work with voiceover to the extent that it can, I guess. The next kind of big piece was photos. Aren't you guys, you know, people who store a lot of photos on your phone? Or
I was kind of interested, and I guess, I don't know, maybe you could be a little freaked out. They were giving the example, you go out to dinner with a friend, and like basically the phone will make suggestions on photos that you can share back with your friends, then it'll tell them photos they should share back with you. It's all a bit,
yeah.
I'm not sure how I feel about it. Maybe we have to see it first. I guess it could be useful. But I know I have lots of photos on my phone, but I keep meaning to find time to actually sit down and go through them. And obviously you have to have someone to go through them with mm-hmm. you and label them. But I think it could be interesting.
That's a cool feature. And it looks like they've done a lot of work on search as well. So if you, you know, if you have got thousands of photos and you're looking for something specific, that they're getting better and better at helping you to find that particular photo. And they've got this For You tab, which will kind of try and intelligently suggest the photos you might be looking for. It's all quite, all this machine learning stuff, it's quite it's kind of strange. I think we're all still kind of getting used to the idea, but you know, it can mm-hmm. it could be very powerful.
One thing I would say is I don't have a lot of photos on my phone. I just every once in a while I'll have to send a picture of something, be it of a what the equivalent of a driver's license or a picture of me to put on social media or whatever. So I'll keep those in my photo library. So those machine learning features probably won't do a whole lot for me because I already know what my photos are and there isn't much as far as memories and context for the phone to really crunch. But one thing, according to Apple, I understand is that there will be improved object recognition for VoiceOver. That was a feature that was introduced in iOS 11 and macOS High Sierra, and it was a good start, but the AI seemed like it may be lacking. So I'd be interested to see, you know, how it improves. I'm sure it doesn't hold a candle to dedicated solutions like Microsoft Seeing AI, but still, I think it'd be a good improvement to see, you know what's changed before, you know, if to see if you even want to be interested enough in a picture to put it into something like Seeing AI. And then another thing with the machine learning, as I understand, is with faster and more capable processors on devices, that eliminates the need for photos to go up and be processed in the cloud. So when things are processed on the device, that limits its transmission and thus can be a potential privacy saver technique.
Yeah, and it is something Apple talked about again and again, was their commitment to privacy. And there's been a lot of debate about that, you know, them versus kind of how Google do things on server and the benefits of each, I guess. But Apple seem to have put their eggs very much in the privacy basket. Yes. And I suppose the next... One of the big enhancements or new features in iOS it was shortcuts. So I think last year it was an app called Workflow won the Apple Design Award, partly for its accessibility, actually. And this is sort of a similar to Automator on Mac for those who use that. So that lets you kind of set up actions and you'll be able to do this on your iPhone. And I liked the example she did where she set up a shortcut where she can say, "I'm going home." And that would send a text message to her partner and would maybe turn the heating on at home and start NPR radio playing in her car or something like that on her phone. Like, it was all these actions just come off her saying that one phrase to Siri. Thomas, what do you think of that whole?
You know, feature? At first I thought, I wonder how much use I'm going to use out of this. But I'll be honest with you, the more and more I thought about it, I really, really love the capability of being able to create your own phrase and tell Siri, this is the command for this phrase, and that will automatically run that automation, whatever you have designed for it. So like she was saying, Siri, where are my keys? And then it automatically will fire up the Tiles app, and then your Tiles will start beeping. And I can relate to that because my son has a Tile. And so now, because he's had to, in the past, just open the device up, find the Tiles app, and then do the paying. Mm-hmm. Now you can just ask Siri. And so I was thinking to myself, right now I use Workflow to some extent. I also use IFTTT, which is similar to Workflow, but a little more generic and basic. And this grew on me. I really like this feature a lot. I think I'm going to use this more than I think I will. At first, some of the examples I wouldn't have interest for, but I can just see how some of this stuff would make my task easier if I automate things without having to do all the things myself. So now I can just ask Siri to do it. So I was pretty impressed. I like this new approach. I think once we have it in our hand is when we'll have a better idea if it's something that we'll actually use. I think it's going to be a personal preference of what they will be able to use and what they won't use. So right now it's kind of hard to gauge, but I, for myself, since I, because I use work group or workflow, it's definitely going to be great for me.
Yeah, I could see that as well. And I suppose we, until we're using it and we can see what actions are available and because there's apps so many that you use, you know.
Now she specific. Now Apple did say that, you know, they have a library, and what's really cool is that that library is only going to get larger, and I think she said the third parties will be able to chime in. So I think once I see the library, I think it's going to be way more extensive than we think, and I think it would be awesome.
I think it's going to be one of these features where I suppose exactly as you guys have said, we see how it comes out, how people are using it, and it's something that, I guess on an individual basis, you do a bit of work on initially to get it tweaked just the way you want it. And then you start using it. And I suppose we'll all find out where it fits into our lives as we start using it.
Yeah, definitely. I could definitely see it being quite useful, quite powerful. And there's been so much talk over the last few months about, or year even probably, or more, about Siri and giving more third party access, which has kind of been one of the criticisms maybe of Siri. So this in a certain way is actually giving, potentially going to bring more third party kind of access and more into Siri. So I think it could be really, really cool, and I'm looking forward to trying it out, definitely.
Yeah, I am too. I think the big elephant in the room that I did not hear is any Siri improvements. I thought I was very disappointed with that.
I think this is about the third year in a row that I find myself kind of looking through. Surely this year they're going to talk a little more about Siri improvements.
None.
Yeah.
No.
Absolutely nothing.
So yeah, fingers crossed we'll we'll just see them come through. And these actions on Siri as well, you can create them on iPhone and iPad, but you'll also be able to run them from your watch or from HomePod as well. So that's pretty cool. There was a few app kind of updates as well. So news app, myself and Stuart don't have access to the news app. It's only in limited countries. Or you don't, I don't think, Stuart, do you?
No, I don't. And I get really, I was just chatting about that today. Some of you were watching it here, you know, the news app. I'm not sure if you or I, Dave, are missing anything with the news app, because I have other apps that I think do pretty much the same thing for me. But I'd like to be able to see it to make a decision. I've never actually seen the thing. So, but it does sound good for those who can use it.
Yeah, absolutely. And Google News looks to be international, and they had a new kind of update, you know, a couple of weeks ago, that's getting really good reviews. So I would have thought Apple might go international with it. But you guys in the States, Thomas, Tyler, can you tell us a bit about News App and what you think of the improvements that they mentioned? It was sparse enough, but there was a couple of little tweaks mentioned.
I use the News App occasionally. Sometimes... certain articles don't always play nicely with VoiceOver. So I guess I just have to see how this new version reacts with that. You know, what's changed as far as accessibility.
What they mentioned in terms of changes was a new browse tab and a new sidebar. So do you guys find that, you know, finding the articles you actually would be interested in reading is a challenge in the user?
At least from my experience, finding the articles is fine. I just generally follow general news and tech. I don't have any specific, like some people follow a greater variety of news categories, and maybe this is maybe geared to them, being, you know, if there's an enhanced for you or browse and see how that stacks up with the current version.
Yeah, I would have to say I have to see what the browse brings to me. I mean, currently it is very accessible. Everything about Apple News is accessible, but it does not provide me enough content that I want. Yes, it's great for people that want a highlight overview for the day on certain topics, but so you're not really missing much. It's very much like the Google News. Google News brings a little bit more content to your fingers. It's a little easier to get to, but the browse itself right now is just your ability to find new channels and new sources. I don't think it was cumbersome already. I Like Tyler, I don't really use Apple News all that much, but I could not tell you what was shown on the screen when that came about, and I have not seen any explanation of what that meant by browser, if there's more categories or what.
I think there was something else that, that is linked to that. They were talking about news and stocks apps being somewhat linked. And I didn't, I don't use stocks, so I didn't quite understand that either. But
that was odd. You know, the whole, you know, when they, I was kind of like, oh my God, this is bad. They go, here, we, and guess what? We brought Apple News to stock.
Yeah.
And it's like, what am I supposed to cheer at this point, or I was
even
like,
the audience kind of feigned applause. It was kind of like, oh, great.
I was like, really? Wow.
Fascinating. And stocks is now an iPad. Woohoo!
That's an app I use even less.
And another, so we'll breeze over stocks, I think. Another app that's changed is iBooks. They've changed the name. It's now Apple Books.
Apple Books.
So we're falling in line with Apple Music, and who knows, maybe, I suppose we have Apple TV, so this is kind of their new branding. Some enhancements.
Get rid of all the eyes, aren't they?
Exactly. Mm. So iMessage next year, maybe. And maybe then we'll have an Apple phone someday. Who knows? It seems to be just a new design, new interface, and that kind of thing.
Yeah, and also I believe, Dave, there was some mention made of, and I don't know if it's going to be of any kind of benefit to us, about if you can quickly search, I think, multiple books. I don't really use iBooks at all, but for people who do and who have a lot of books on their device, my understanding is that you can more quickly find the books you want, but I'm not really sure what's changed.
Something like a Reading Now tab, I think they mentioned. I think that's about it. I don't really use iBooks myself. I subscribe to Audible, and then I occasionally might download an iBook or a Kindle, but I wouldn't use that. Thomas or Tyler?
I think it definitely needs some improvements. I think there's always been some accessibility issues with iBooks all along. Yes, it does work, but in some cases it doesn't, and then if it does work, it's kind of limited. It seems like it's a very elementary basic app for book reading. Where we have gotten so used to, like Voice Dream Reader, where it's more robust and you have a lot more options to pick from. So any new improvements to Apple Books would be fantastic on my end.
Cool. It's no harm to see those things enhanced, but I think what probably the next big kind of tentpole of this one was the new phone addiction. Thomas, you love this phone addiction stuff, don't you?
The which part?
The whole phone addiction idea.
The phone addiction. Yes, the yes,
I know you're a fan of this particular topic.
I am, because this was coming. You knew this was coming because they've been under a lot of pressure by all these organizations and groups and saying, we got to get this under control for adults and children alike. And I thought they did a pretty good job on this one.
So did I, actually. And some of the features do look quite useful. I mean, the Do Not Disturb, just having a little bit more control over Do Not Disturb, and you can turn it on and set an end time when you...
the screen time, which they were talking about, which is, I like that at the end of the week, you get a statistics of how much time you've been spending on it. And if you feel like you have the choice to say, I want to spend less time on this particular app, so it will tell me that I reached my limit, that whatever I set it for. And if you can just pull yourself out of that and say, okay, I need to put it down. But
I like that as well. I thought that was really... And the other thing, when I was listening to that piece, I thought that when the Do Not Disturb one, where you can set it to switch off Do Not Disturb at the end of meetings, I frequently stick my phone on silent when I'm going to a meeting and then completely forget about it and miss a load of calls later on. So that, I think, would be something I'd use.
Specifically, I like it that it's specific to apps. And that's pretty cool.
That's and what I really like, yeah. And the parental element to that as well, where you can literally say, my kids now don't have access to these apps during downtime.
And you put time limits on them now. You can actually put time limits on pertinent apps, not just in total general, which is really cool. Like he was saying, that obviously, like the phone, you would not put a time limit on that, but you got a time limit on this. And I like the allowance idea too.
Yeah. So yeah, I think I agree with you. I think they did a pretty good job on that side of things, and like I said, it's been in the media a lot, so we all kind of had a hunch they might address it, and yeah, I think that could be really useful. There's also notifications, which I'm quite happy with. It's one of the things I think I mentioned ahead of WWDC was the notifications. They just come in and they just appear on your screen in kind of the order they came in, and whether it's apps you care about or apps you don't care about, they're all just in one big bundle. And now that you're going to be able to group notifications by app and even by category, which is cool. Stuart, how do you find kind of notifications on iOS?
Yeah, I find notifications, I normally once a week go in and try and clear out what's sitting in my notification center for the week. So I'm really going to like this. I really like the idea of group notifications, and I like the idea of being able to, sort of go through it either app by app or group by group. So I think it's going to make it a bit more efficient in how I manage this stuff.
Exactly, because I can't even think of messaging where I could go, okay, my WhatsApp and my messages and my Facebook Messenger notifications will all be there together, because if I do it by category,
Help me on this. Help me to think this through, okay? So when I heard this, I thought, that is absolutely, I love group notification idea, but didn't we have this several iOS back and then they took it out?
Yep.
So I was like, so you're making this sound like it's a brand new deal, and it might be in how they present it. Maybe it's something different, a little bit different, but they used to have the option where we used to group by that. I used to like it that way.
That's right. Yeah.
So it's like, is this new?
Yeah, it is. I suppose, I think it seems like it's a bit of an enhanced version, like I say, because you got the categories as well. Something I'm speculating on, but I don't know if they'll do, I'd like them to do, would be if you could prioritize as well. So you could maybe say, I want, these key apps always to be at the top or something like that. I don't know if that will be part of it or not.
It's new and improved.
Hmm.
And that's what they're going to say. Yeah, you're probably right. It is improved, but it's funny how what goes around comes around and comes back. I am all for it. I loved it how it used to be. I don't like the chronological order they do now, because it's all sporadic throughout the notification center. But especially if you open up your lock screen, I think that's the main focus here, was the lock screen they were emphasizing.
Mm-hmm. And anyone else as excited as I am pretending to be about new Animoji and tongue detection and Memoji?
I couldn't believe it. It was the highlight of my night.
I can't wait to get my own me emoji.
When do you start building it? Yeah. Yeah.
They are kind of fun. I have got the Animoji now, but I never really use them. That kind of way. I kind of used them the first few days and they're kind of fun. And then I forgot about them. So it's kind of.
I'm going to put some earrings on, put a mohawk on, red hair.
Memoji, huh? Yeah. So it's like an emoji of people. Is that like basically where people create an emoji of oneself?
Yes, and it's animated. So regular emojis are still, whereas these actually, it's actually a little video that it's creating. So as you talk, the mouth of the character moves, or if you tilt your head, the character's head tilts. So it's
kind of rip it off from bit emojis. You ever heard of bit emojis? Mm. It's kind of a rip off from that.
So is this going to be, do we think, because she was demonstrating it, obviously creating one today, but this kind of thing, I wonder, will it be in any way accessible? I mean, can VoiceOver, because it's presumably using the camera to take a snapshot, is it?
Well, it's video actually. So I think it tells you when I'm using Animoji, I think it tells me like you're too close, move back kind of thing, like it does with when you're setting up a Face ID. But it only will work on kind of iPhone 10, possibly. I think now it only works on iPhone 10 anyway. So I assume
the Animoji does,
So yeah, it's interesting. No new emojis, regular emojis, which is, it's rare that we don't get new emojis announced.
I think
that usually comes in the fall with the Unicode updates to the Unicode consortium. That usually comes in the fall with either the 0.1 or 0.2 updates. That's been the pattern for the last couple of years.
Okay. But these disability ones will go in then, will they? They were announced a couple of months back.
I thought I read somewhere there are some emojis before this WWDC came along. Apple made a reveal. They made an announcement that there will be new emojis. They just didn't really talk about it, really. Mm-hmm. I thought they said there were like 66 new emojis. I don't count me out. Don't hold me to it, but that's what I've heard.
Okay. And guys, this time next year, we may be recording on FaceTime.
FaceTime, yeah. You know, Dave, this is something I was looking for a long time, and I kind of wondered why it didn't come 2 or 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. But I kind of think now I'm not that excited about it because there are so many other things. I mean, we're on one today. It'll be hard to. I can see the convenience of it, especially if you're in a group message and connecting everyone on FaceTime. But I'm not as excited as I might have been about this 2-3 years ago. So I think I'll use it, but I won't be using it a lot.
I am excited. I this was one of the big ones I thought was really huge for me because, as you said, Stuart, this has been years in the making that should have come out earlier. But all my family are on the iDevice, and it's going to make it so much simpler to do this because we do that from time to time, and we always had to use Skype. Everybody had to create their own account, get their names, and get it all linked up. And this is already into the ecosystem. And that's what I like about it. And not only that, but the audio quality is bar none the best. Oh, my gosh. The quality is way better than Hangout or Skype or other options that you may have discussed. So if the quality isn't your issue, but like Dave was saying, the audio is good enough that you can actually use this as a podcast platform with a group of people that do have iDevices and et cetera.
It's funny though, Thomas. Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, Dave. I'm assuming you'll be able to do this both with the iDevices and so iPad, iPhone, and HomePod as well.
I don't know about HomePod.
Will the HomePod allow you to? Because that could be useful. I'm thinking for people who might be, say, you have somebody elderly who's on their own, has a HomePod.
Don't know about HomePod, but I definitely think it would be for the iPhone, iPad, and your Mac for sure.
On watch as well was mentioned. The audio obviously only works on watch. Yeah.
I'm not familiar enough with the HomePod if that is an option.
It wasn't mentioned anyway on by the guys announcing it. And like Thomas, you say your family are all on iDevices, and I think that's where the weakness of FaceTime comes in for me, because my family and friends aren't. It's the same reason I don't use messages. I use WhatsApp 99% of the time.
Same here.
Because so many people, at least half of the people I contact, are on another platform. Yeah, so, but it is, I think you're right. I think it was a long time in the making, and I think it was needed. So that's kind of all the announcement on iOS. How do people feel, Stuart? How do you feel about iOS as a whole? Like,
I think, as you said at the beginning, but the big thing is the performance enhancements. Where there's nothing going to, you know, and obviously I'm sure there are other things that will pop up during the beta cycle. But you know, there's nothing that I was kind of going out today really excited. I guess the workflow with Siri is something that I will certainly play with. How much I'll use it, I don't know. And FaceTime, group FaceTime, even though I've slated it, I'm sure I'll use it at some point. But yeah, look, I think it's one of those updates that we're going to see more stability, I hopefully, fingers crossed. But maybe nothing kind of, you know, hugely earth-shattering.
Yeah. I agree with Stuart. I mean, they pretty much said that early on, not to expect much from iOS 12. So if people were going into this thinking they were going to get a lot, I'm afraid they were disappointed. So there are going to be people that are disappointed, but I was not disappointed. I kind of assume it was going to be kind of a ho-hum kind of a keynote. But there were a few surprises, like Stuart said about the Siri shortcut was a big one for me, and I think the improvement of the speed of the older phones and keeping them on the old devices, that was huge for me, seeing a big 40-70% faster on old device. Those two alone are probably the biggest two that I got out of it.
Cool. And Tyler, what are your overall thoughts on the iOS side of things?
I think it's about time that they would focus on performance and quality control and all that in iOS 12, considering a number of high profile bugs and exploits in iOS 11. As far as performance on older devices, what I wonder is what that means for devices with throttled performance, devices with, you know, diminished battery capacity, and say now on 11.4 they're throttled, and so their performance is obviously affected. What will happen with iOS 12 is that, you know, how much of a improvement will be realized without replacing the battery.
I suppose that's going to be an individual case.
And then also, as far, I saw something on Mac Rumors about Siri, that it was getting improved knowledge on sports, celebrities, and food and nutrition. And I don't know, is that just a one-off, you know, just a improvement of those specific knowledge things, or are they, you know, they didn't talk about it in the keynote, but I wonder, like, is this, are they just doing that incremental improvement on specific knowledge things, or are they going to try to really, you know, improve on general knowledge across the board? Because that's what I feel like Siri really needs, that and conversational queries, which is why I thought they were going in that direction when a couple, maybe a month ago or something, there was a revamp to how Siri reacted to jokes. If you told Siri, tell me a joke or knock, knock, you know, she would talk, she'd go, who's there? And then you could respond conversationally and then you could carry on that conversation. Same thing with you. If you say, told me a joke, Siri would tell the joke and she'd say something like, ha ha, have another one. And then if you say yes or sure or something, she would learn to respond to that query. And I wondered if they were possibly using that for testing, using people's conversational interactions with something like knock, knock jokes to determine Siri's conversational abilities. That has yet to materialize, but I always found that interesting. The fact that they did those changes before WWDC only for now to only get the three things, sports, celebrities, and food and nutrition.
Yeah, I think Siri, though, it is an ongoing thing. Like, there is some conversational stuff in there. If you ask about, you know, how's the weather today? And then you say, and what about tomorrow? She'll, you know, she gets it. So there is a certain amount of that. And I'm with you, Thomas, I think overall on iOS, it was pretty well what I expected. Like I was saying, I was hoping for the earlier rumors of kind of an overhaul of home screen and all that kind of stuff, but it looks like we're waiting until next year for that. And
definitely, you know, they were pretty clear about that a couple of months ago too. And I thought they did a great job making sure that the public could understand what they were expecting. So I got what I expected. I did. There was a few thrown in there just to make this somewhat kind of a new thing. Yeah. But overall, I was pleased in what I heard. And I think that quality is definitely is what we're focusing on.
There'll be some interesting things to play around with anyway.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
So shall we move on to Apple Watch?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So who in the room has one? I have one. Thomas, I know, has one.
I have
recently.
One.
Stuart or
Taylor? I do not have one. Now, mind you, after today, I would certainly, and I've been thinking about it for a while. Today aided me a little bit in that process.
So some of the highlights, I think there's a couple of new workouts now. So they've added yoga and hiking. There's something I like here is, because I do it all the time, is I forget to start a workout. So now it'll do auto detect of starting and ending workouts. I think it still presents you with a screen where you have to confirm, but at least it's going to notify you, hey, are you working out? And you go, oh yeah, I am actually. I think that's a really good feature.
Yeah, I really like that option there too. I love that it's going to automate it. Obviously, it's going to sense that you're doing something and just kind of remind you just to turn it on. So I like that feature too.
Something that struck me as a non-Apple Watch user, so you guys may know if this exists already, but when the lady was doing the demo, I think she was using an exercise bike, and she was, if I'm correct, she was explaining that she can read the output of the bike screen from her watch. Mm-hmm. Is that correct? So does that mean those things are going to be accessible, or has that been there for a while?
It is a really cool feature. I think it has been around for a little while, or it was at least somewhat announced before, where iOS devices will be able to communicate with gym equipment, but of course it requires your gym to get the new equipment that talks to iOS. But I definitely think it might take 5 or 10 years to filter through to all the gyms, but I think it could be a game changer for us.
Yeah, definitely. And I know the walkie-talkie feature sounded kind of potentially interesting, maybe if you couldn't take out your phone and you're on your bike and you want to have a quick chat with somebody.
Yeah. And it's kind of that kind of voice messaging always struck me as something that made sense on Apple Watch, because using actual, obviously you can't type on a keyboard on the Apple Watch. They have that kind of scribble feature, but it's only okay. And you can dictate, of course, into regular messages. So I definitely think there's a space for that. Would you use it, Thomas?
Definitely. I definitely would. I was very excited. I said this is probably one of the top two that I really love. I want the walkie-talkie. I can see using this a lot in communicating with the wife and other friends that have Apple Watch. This is going to be cool. I think it's gimmicky. I agree. I don't think a lot of people will use it because it's, I think, it's specific to Apple Watch. It didn't mention if it worked on the iOS. I don't know. But if it's just a watch to watch, it's going to be extremely limited and only for niche people. But I love this feature.
It's certainly more useful than the tapping your heartbeat feature from a few years ago. And there's another feature as well that I don't know how you guys feel about this. I'm a bit, I'll see how it plays in real life, but this that you won't have to say the Hello Siri command to invoke her anymore. You'll just kind of lift your wrist and talk to the watch.
Yeah, we were watching that and my fiance said, so you look even more weird now because you won't even be saying hey Siri. People just think you're talking to yourself when you're lifting the watch towards your head. So I don't know, maybe we have to just get used to it.
I can see why you say it was awesome, Thomas, except that my reservation is that when I first got my Apple Watch, I had speak on wrist raise turned on, and I ended up turning it off because every time I opened a fridge or, you know, started typing on a computer or anything, it was constantly waking up when I didn't want it to. And that would be my fear with it. But I don't know.
You're not the only one that does that. I think I know Michael has one. I know that quite a few of my friends, and we all do the same thing. We turned the raise to wake off because we didn't want that to happen. But yeah, you're right. I mean, we would have to have that on in order for Hey Siri to work, because now we have to kind of wake it up by tapping it, and then we can say hey Siri.
Well, but at the moment I have a halfway where I have it wake, but I don't have voiceover. There's wake on wrist raise and there's speak on wrist raise, and that's because I have some vision and I can actually, if I use the simple watch face, I can actually somewhat read the time. So that's
well. Then in your case, it should work. It should work because you have the raise to wake.
But I just fear that it'll keep waking up Siri when I don't want it to. So that's my fear.
My fear is how much is it going to listen to you? When does it stop listening to you? And et cetera. And so I imagine it's only when you raise it up, it's going to listen. Yeah. And if you're not talking to it, hopefully.
Yeah, it waits a second and sort of says, you know, you're not speaking to me, I'll go back to sleep.
Yeah, I may be talking to somebody when I raise my watch to see what time it is, and they'll be going, I'm sorry, I don't understand what you're saying.
Exactly. Siri just suddenly starts going, I found something on the web for that. Oh,
God. Or if you're talking about hardwood floors and then turns out you're messaging someone with that, you know. Yeah.
But I think that it can be useful. I did like their approach of saying no more having to say, you just raise it up and talk to it. The theory on paper, it sounds great. I have to see it in action before I make a definitive decision.
I can definitely see the idea. And I as well, the fact is that sometimes you say those the Hello Siri command and the wrong device wakes up and all that kind of stuff. So maybe it will help with that. They also have announced third party background audio. So if you're a Spotify user or TuneIn Radio or whatever, I don't know if they're on Apple Watch, but there are probably examples of third party apps doing audio and also podcasts. Thomas, you're the only one with the watch. Do you use it?
I don't use that at all, because really I just turn them on my phone and I just put my Bluetooth or my AirPods in and I just listen to it from there. I have no use for it.
I can see why some people do, and maybe if you're in the gym or something and you don't want to have anything else with you and you just want to have something playing from your wrist, you know.
Yeah, I'm thinking my biggest fear on that, Dave, is battery life.
Yeah.
Always. It's gonna chew it up. Can you imagine playing a podcast or music on it? You think battery life is bad on it now, wait until you put that stuff on it.
Yeah. And Thomas, you didn't get your wish list item, which was third party faces.
No, I was so disappointed. You know, they were getting there. They were showing how they got this new Pride face on it and some new complications where third parties can start adding complications. So I got halfway what I wanted. So I got the we can design our own complication from apps, but it didn't get any faces gallery.
Is that update. Connected to shortcuts? Is that what those complications are essentially? Are they the
yes? It's a shortcut to those shortcuts. I was like, oh wow, that's
clever.
Is I think that's going to be big.
Yeah, I can definitely see myself doing that. Just making something happen just from my watch.
But no opening up to face gallery. Sorry, we're stuck with the face that we have from Apple, and we're stuck with that.
Yeah, I have heard it debated because people, you know, Android Wear and Pebble have those, you know, stores where you can buy faces, and they're full of thousands of, you know, not very high quality faces. So I was always skeptical about whether Apple would let that happen because we know they care so much about what things look like. So I wasn't expecting it, but I wouldn't have been hugely surprised if they did, I guess. But on the whole, it's probably not a huge update to Apple Watch, but it's in terms of watchOS, but there's a few nice little features in there, I think. Are you happy enough with that, with what you got from Watch today?
Definitely. I'm more happy with this than I was on my iOS on the phone, actually. I was looking for the activity. The more the motivation is getting better. I like a lot of that. So if you're a fitness person, it is really, really cool. I knew they were going to improve it somehow. I didn't know how. I like the Hey Siri not being there. And of course the walkie-talkie, of course. I really enjoyed that a lot.
I really like I think my favorite feature of the Apple Watch update would be the auto start of workouts. Then after that was everything on Apple Watch. They then moved on to Apple TV. I know myself, Stuart, and Thomas have Apple TV. Do you have an Apple TV, Tyler?
No, I do not.
Okay, so there's three of us. I think the first feature they talked about was, they talked again, they recapped, you know, the 4K and HDR stuff, which they got added last year. But now they've added, it seems, Dolby Atmos for better sound. I'm one of those people, I just use the sound on my TV. I don't have a soundbar or anything.
I have a soundbar, but obviously I didn't upgrade my Apple TV last year because of the 4K. I didn't really think I needed it. And I'm not even sure that I would upgrade, that I would want the new version just for the added sound. I mean, I'm happy enough with the sound as it is. But I think, Dave, just a general comment on Apple TV is that I think maybe Thomas is ultimately going to have a better Apple TV experience than you or I. I think a lot of the big networks, certainly in the US, they're doing a lot of work around it. Even in Germany, they mentioned Germany, Switzerland, I think France in the presentation. We're not seeing any of that where cable networks are kind of getting into Apple TV stuff and content content distribution over here. So I think if you're in the US, Apple TV is a much more exciting product to watch.
I think you're right, Stuart. It's unfortunate that other countries are not getting the deserved attention to be able to utilize what Apple TV was really meant to be. And today, I tell you what, I know a lot of people have some are not very happy people about Spectrum. Spectrum is a cable service in the United States. It's one of many cable services, but Spectrum is definitely in my area. And I have used them before. You know, when it comes to customer support, that's another topic another day. But overall, to use this as a cable box, Apple, using my existing Apple TV to use my cable on this and treat it that way and have all my apps without any signup, zero signup, is huge. I was like, oh my gosh, this is absolutely, this is kind of blew me away in a way. I am truly looking forward to this and seeing how much it really does integrate. If it means to get rid of my cable box so I can be able to put this on my, I'm all for it. But it's sad to see that they only had three examples out of thousands of 10,000 people out there that won't have this service. But that was probably the biggest draw for me. Now, for the speaker bar, I do have a speaker bar. The Dolby thing, obviously, you have to get certified Dolby sound bars. And I can't imagine. The first thing that came to my mind is sad is ding, 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 ding. I'm thinking dollar signs. I'm thinking
same here.
I was like,
yeah.
I'll get a HomePod if I want stereo. And so I was thinking, why don't you just made it in, that into the HomePod? That would be more makes sense. I think that would up the ante on the HomePod if you provide the Dolby in that. Yeah. So I was thinking a lot of holes. And so, no, I'm not going to replace my speaker bar with a Dolby. Yes, I think the surround sound, the binaural thing would be kind of cool. But isn't that the whole point of the theater room is to have those speakers in the back and the front and the side so you can sound from the back? Yeah, binaural sounds cool, but on the headphones, it's absolutely fantastic. But I can't see how binaural is going to work on a speaker bar.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you there.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, there's a few really nice things. Again, if you're in the States, I think, you know, Thomas, people like yourself very benefit from, they were saying if your Apple TV is on the same network as your cable provider, mm-hmm. it'll all just sync up. I mean, it sounds fantastic. But I think, again, Dave, for URI, it'll be pretty much Netflix for the time being. And I certainly won't be upgrading my Apple TV anytime in the near future.
Yeah, our providers, we have a very different market over here that we're, if you're signed up with one of the providers, if they do have an app, like on iOS, they have an app and all the content is already in that one app. So you're not needing to go to other, you have the HBO app or the NBC app, do you know what I mean? Because it's all just in the one anyway. But they're not making Apple TV apps over here. Like none of our providers really have made Apple TV apps, which is really disappointing. So yeah, I use Apple TV for Netflix and Amazon Prime and that's it.
Yeah.
And a bit of YouTube. So yeah, that was Apple TV. So yeah, it wasn't a huge update on Apple TV, but I definitely think, like you say, Thomas, if those things roll out across multiple providers and countries, then it's a pretty powerful feature.
Honestly, I think it will, and this is why I think it will. Okay, and cable companies right now are struggling big time because all the cord cutters are going to Netflix, Hulu, DirecTV, Live. All these cord cutters are getting away from the cable company. So the cable company's got to come up with something that's going to be different. And so if they can appeal to people, say, hey, you can use Spectrum on your Apple TV. And so you can use your Siri and everything you've gotten used to. And you know how accessible it is. All right, you know what? That's a draw. And that's what they need pretty bad. So these cable companies all across the world are suffering. So I would be surprised if people aren't jumping on board on this just for that reason.
Yeah, no, it's an industry I work in. So I know there's a lot of huge amount of change going on in the industry. So it's a really interesting industry to be looking at the moment. So I hope Apple keep pushing it, you know. We then went on to Mac. So this is Tyler's baby. So it's named after the desert. Pronounce it again for me there, Tyler.
Yes, the Mojave Desert in California, I believe.
They announced it as they very much built it up. Craig came on, he said this is a striking, called a striking update, and you know, a huge update.
Striking. Yeah, it was Craig. Striking changes to the Mac.
I didn't think it was that striking, but I'll be here. I do have a Mac, iMac as well, but I'd be curious what this really provides to us.
The first one mentioned was dark mode. This is something that's been talked about for, it feels like years to me. And now we have that dark mode. And I definitely think there is an accessibility element to that because a lot of low vision people could benefit hugely from that kind of contrast. Are you guys fans of dark mode, or do any of you have some usable vision? I'm not sure to use.
I am completely blind, no vision, no light perception. So the screen could be light, dark, whatever, and that wouldn't make any difference to me.
I just put screen curtain on.
The screen curtain. Sometimes I find, you know, if I need to set assistance for something, someone will look at the screen, go, oh, it's black. So then I'll try to adjust the screen curtain, whatever, the brightness. But other than that, I really don't do much with the display or the resolution or appearance and themes and eye candy and all that. In 2014, Apple introduced a sort of a quasi dark mode, I guess, with OS X Yosemite, where it changed the theme for the menu bar and dock, but kept the contents of Windows in its original theme. And now apparently this is a full-fledged dark mode. So apparently it's to provide consistency and from like a darkened interface with, you know, if there's less light or something, then there's maybe less distraction, less opportunity for distractions. Yeah.
And they said you can kind of have a change over the day, I think, as well. They said something. So maybe as you get into towards nighttime, you maybe want that kind of shift towards, you know, darker.
I think you're right, Dave. I think this is it's going to appeal a lot to the low vision, that too much light or contrast is too bright. I think that they're going to already like this dark mode. I think it's going to be easier for them to see, but I think it's more for sighted people. However, I was kind of, yes, you're right. It's been talked about and thrown around about. People kind of, this is one item that was not a surprise that they mentioned the dark mode. They already been talking about this for months that it was coming. And unlike, I was super, super shocked that we get dark mode for the Mac, but not for the iOS. What,
you took the words out of my mouth, Thomas.
Yeah, I was like, what the heck? I mean, what's the difference?
Yeah, and it's something that people have been asking for on iOS for quite a long time, because the accessibility feature now, I can't remember what's it called again, the smart invert, I think it does that to an extent, although it doesn't always, it messes up pictures still sometimes, but it's better than it used to be. So I guess that's the closest we have to a dark mode on iOS. But yeah, I thought they might go fully fledged on both, but yeah, mm-hmm. I think it's a good feature though, and I'd like to say the low vision people, I think, will like it, hopefully, and look forward to hearing from them about what they think of it when they get it in their hands in the autumn. We then had desktop stacks. So I myself keep about no more than 5 or 6 files on my desktop at any one time, so I'm not a messy desktop person. I'm quite good at kind of filing things away. So desktop stacks doesn't interest me personally, but I can definitely see the use of it. Tyler, do you use your desktop much?
If I need to store a file temporarily, I'll use the desktop. And I keep my Dropbox. I have my Dropbox folder in the, you know, my home user folder, and I make an alias, shortcut to the desktop. Yeah. But other than that, I really don't use it much. So that won't mean much to me.
Yeah, Thomas?
Yeah, I think this is, again, more of a visual thing. If you're one of those that like to dirty up your desktop with a lot of items, when I had Sight, I would do that. I used to be one of those people that would stash all sorts of things on the desktop. Now that you've got the stacks, I think that the idea is great. I don't see how this will benefit to us all that much. So this didn't really appeal to me that much.
Yeah, I'm the same. I'm saying it makes sense. It looks like a good feature, but won't affect me probably too much. They then moved on to the Finder, which has got a bit of an overhaul. It has a new view called Gallery, which it seems puts kind of one...
Gallery view?
Yeah, and it puts whatever you're focused on currently kind of large, and then all the other things in the folder are kind of small below that, and thumbnails is what it seems visually. So I don't know if it's one we'd use as VoiceOver users, but I did like the quick actions bar at the bottom.
So basically it's an update and refinement of the existing quick look interface. If you have an automator action you want to apply to a specific file, it's now simpler. That's all I know about it.
Yeah, he kind of mentioned a quick actions toolbar almost along the bottom of the Finder folder, I think. So I guess whatever file is currently in focus along the bottom of the, you know, if you go to the, if you...
The bottom, yeah. Is that the new part of the new gallery view? People who are going, they described it as like thumbnails going through the gallery view and seeing, you know, photos, videos, and deciding whether to rotate or crop or something. Without doing basic edits without
open. Or, you know what I mean?
So it's basically like quick... You could call it Quick Look on steroids. The original intention of Quick Look was to view your documents or movies without needing to open the application that created it or that manages it. And so now this is opening and some editing.
Yeah.
Just making it more powerful.
Yeah, exactly. It's being able to take more actions without having to actually go into another app and load something up. So I could definitely see benefits to that for certain things. So It is already quite useful, as you say, at times. Even sometimes I've got an MP3 file or something now in the current version, you can actually play it without having to open up iTunes or something. So, yeah, this could be really useful. He talked about screen capture. I don't know, do you guys make tutorials or anything like that where you use screen capture, where you won't have to go into QuickTime anymore by the look of it? It's going to be one of the regular screen capture tools. Have I understood that correctly? The video screen capture.
That's what it sounds like. I don't do much screen capturing, and sometimes I'll report a bug to Apple or something, and they'll ask for a screenshot, and I would use QuickTime, but that's already long deprecated, even in current versions. So I wouldn't be surprised, if QuickTime, that doesn't seem long for this world. Mm-hmm. So I'm not surprised that they're sort of revamping the screen capture interface.
Yeah, that's exactly the kind of time I would use it, either making some sort of a tutorial video or bug reports. So yeah, if they've made that easier to do, then I'm happy. Thomas, did you see the continuity upgrades? And it seems now, for example, you could use something like Seeing AI or KNFB Reader maybe or something like that to take a document, or maybe not those apps, maybe it would have to be an Apple app, time will tell, but you could take a scan of a document with your phone and it'll just pop up on your Mac with continuity.
Yes, they have definitely improved the continuity, haven't they? That one kind of stood out to me, the scan one. I was like, oh, wow, that's kind of cool. Mm-hmm. But it just really depends, again, I in terms of accessibility, what we can do with that. How that's going to be able to be implemented for us, this is to be seen. So there's a lot of questions for us to wait, see how accessible a lot of these things are. Like you guys were talking about the quick action and this new tile rotation. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it will be accessible, but I think there are some positive things in this that would be certainly welcome, as long there's something that we'll be able to take those documents and be able to use it in a reasonable fashion that we want it to be.
And I believe they've made some improvements to how VoiceOver users can use kind of things like markup, or if you need to annotate or read documents that have annotation on them, the kind of handwriting stuff and that kind of stuff will improve as well. So
mm-hmm.
Hopefully that stuff will help us out to some extent at least. Now guys, are Apple going to merge iOS and macOS?
No, they are not. They did do a project, or they announced a sort of a multi-year project of allowing unified technologies across iOS and macOS so basically Mac users get better access to the ecosystem of iOS apps.
Exactly.
In the future.
It's going to make it easier for a developer to say, you know what, I'm going to make this app, my iOS app, I'm going to make it available on the Mac as well without a huge amount of work to port it over. It's going to be much simpler by the sound of it.
I don't think, didn't he say that was coming in 2019? They were using their own apps as a sort of test. They used the home, the news, and stocks, and voice memos, using those tests this year, and then bringing it to third-party developers next year.
That's my understanding of it. Phase one, he said, was our apps this year, and then phase two will be 2019. You guys, the developers, will be able to create it. Stuart, could this tempt you over to Mac if you had more lovely accessible apps that are familiar to you from iOS on your computer?
I think it's a great idea. I think this is, I agree with you. I think this is maybe what people were thinking of a hybrid. It wasn't so much that iOS would run on a Mac, but this is what they were talking about, is having an app written for the Mac that would connect with your iOS app and talk with each other. So you can be able to use it together.
To answer your question, Dave, I'm not sure. I'm not sure that there would be enough in it for me to move. I'm terribly Windows focused outside of iOS. I think I'll have to see how that evolves. It's going to be interesting to watch it for the next maybe 2 years and see where it goes.
I'm with you, Stuart. I don't think it's going to take off. No, I think that those that are on Windows like myself as well, it's not going to make me go full time over to Mac at all, because that
it was a tongue in cheek question really, because I knew it's not that big of a change that's going to move somebody from Windows, but it is still it's a really interesting conversation though, because Windows has done that kind of merge in a sense where you have a touchscreen device that's also a regular desktop device, when you know, depending on whether it's plugged to a keyboard or whether you've, you know, you're just using it in tablet mode. Mm. And there are people who want that, but Apple seem to be firmly sticking with, no, it's a keyboard and mouse on the Mac and it's touch on iOS, and they are different. So it's going to be interesting to see how all that plays out.
Although I suppose some of it might transmit in that your, you know, Bluetooth keyboard support for within iOS, and there's a number of apps that allow that support that, you know, that will let you use those keyboard shortcuts in their apps. That might transmit quite well to Mac.
True.
So there is that possibility, I suppose.
Yeah, it's what makes it a really interesting time, actually, I think, over the next few years, to see how these, you know, because tablets have become, they're really maturing now, the tablets, and the iPad is becoming a more, they're giving it more pro features all the time, kind of, as they call it. So yeah.
Now the one thing they didn't talk about in the Mac and was how in iOS you were able to stay on the platform. If you're already running iOS 11, you will be able to run iOS 12. But from what I've been reading is that it does change a little bit who can be qualified for the new Mojave. Is that, I believe from what I've read, if you're an iMac Mini or an iMac, it has to be at least a late 2012 version. And so I think that has got moved up. So I believe it was 2011. Okay. For the High Sierra, so that got cut off. So so those people with the older devices are not going to have the same jump up like they did with the
often
iOS.
Often you don't get the features anyway. I remember I had a 2015 or something, and or 2010 one or something, and then I couldn't get things like continuity because, you know, the hardware literally wasn't in my machine. So that does happen with the Macs, yeah. You've got now, as we mentioned there, you've got news, voice memos, stocks, and
Apple News.
Home, I think.
Home as well. So, yeah, it'd be interesting how they work. I don't know if I'd be using any of them myself on my Mac. Home is one I heard a lot of commentators looking for. Do any of you guys use Home now on your iOS?
I don't use Home because I don't have any HomeKit accessories. But I know that's something that a lot of people have talked about, and it makes sense considering if you want to use it as a hub, if your Mac is at your house and not all your HomeKit accessories are internet connected, that can serve as a hub similar to an Apple TV or iPad. So if it works that way, I think that's a pretty good feature.
I'm the same as Tyler. I don't have any HomeKit devices, and I know I spoke to you, I think, Dave, a couple of times about this before, but one of the things that in relation to HomeKit is that I was quite disappointed. Again, the Apple TV is somewhat restricted in Ireland. You can't use it as a controller device or as a hub.
Because we just don't have that support.
Yeah, so you would have to hack it to change the region, and then changing the region and has other implications. So I don't know, I'm just hoping we get a bit more Apple TV love in Ireland in general.
Mm. Yeah, and I think but yeah, I could see the home, anyway, there was a lot of demand, so I'd say of the apps that they brought across, that's the one people are going to be most pleased to see brought across.
I think his HomeKit is a wonderful feature, but again, I think it's late to the party. Yes, I do have smart devices, but not HomeKit.
Yeah, I'm the same.
Smart. I do have Alexa several devices that are smart, but not for Apple Kit, so the Home Kit, I should say. So that's kind of disappointing, as in, you know, if they have come out this earlier, yes, it would probably made my decision choice differently. But even to this day, it's still not Home Kit ready. So they're lacking of companies that are making the Home Kit. Yes, there are some available, but it seems like there's a lot more that are not. that are available.
It's definitely easier to pick up a Google Home or an Amazon.
Definitely.
Yeah. And also, just as a general comment, when I looked at the whole Home Kit idea and looked at the Apple offerings for their compatible stuff, they seem quite a bit more expensive than other comparable things.
I agree with you, Stuart. It's way more expensive, and that's probably the other second reason why I haven't really bought a Home Kit smart device yet.
Now, guys, I learned something new today, which is that like and comment and share buttons on websites, even if I don't click on them, can still track me across different websites. All this stuff is becoming huge in the news now. This sort of ever since the Facebook stuff recently, especially. Are you impressed by these new privacy features, Thomas, and the security and the efforts Apple are going to?
You know, does it surprise me? No. This is what they were born for. They love this. This is what they've been doing PR for many years. Tim Cook has already thrown a couple of volleys across the bow of Facebook about their privacy. And there was a recent article recently that all these contracts, you can find out, you can download these things, see how much information they have on you. And somebody did a research on Apple on how much it tracks you. And they were surprised to see how little information there was. So, no, I'm not surprised at all, because they don't make money off of this stuff, and so they don't need to. So, yeah, they should be very proud in what they do and push that, where other people don't have that luxury, where Google and Facebook and all those guys, that's where they're monetized, where their money's coming from. So yeah. I get it. And a lot of people don't really put the two together in how creepy that can be when you use those things. So no, it didn't surprise me. And what they introduced today, I thought was great. Any more security, the better it is for me. I like it.
They've really been ramping it up over the last year or two. I think that kind of, you know, you pay for those, some other services, you pay with your data, and with us, you pay with your money, but we'll protect your data. So that's kind of becoming their sort of USP, I think. And yeah.
Yes, and I think with the new GDPR regulation that went to effect last month, I think a lot of companies are going to have to, Facebook included, and Google and Amazon and everyone else, we're going to have to take a look at those things and how that will affect their business and their collection of user data. Yeah.
Aren't you guys in the US lucky that the EU is looking after you with the
starts the process.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. Because
you're welcome.
Yeah, it did implement all across over here to help us as well. But you know what? Nothing's gonna change. They're still gonna gather data. They know a lot more than you.
Absolutely.
Think.
It's
absolutely
their business, like you said. But
they know so much about people.
It's not gonna change, because they would be losing money if it did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely it's something I think people are at least more aware of now, which I think is a great step.
But I think this is Apple's way of jabbing to those people. That's all it is. It's just a PR to jab at other people. We got privacy, and we already know this.
Yeah, absolutely. It is definitely part of their marketing pitch. The final thing I think of interest really on Mac was the App Store is getting a bit of an overhaul. It looks to me like it's going to take on more of the iOS feel. They did a big overhaul of the App Store, wasn't it last year? I think iOS 11 got a big update to the App Store, so now they've done that on Mac, and it seems like even some big companies like Microsoft, Adobe, Panic are bringing their apps into the Mac App Store, which has got to be huge for Apple to be able to bring those into that environment. Any thoughts on Tyler? Do you download apps from the Mac App Store, or have you up to now preferred?
I don't use when the Mac App Store first came out, I thought it was kind of cool. I downloaded stuff. I haven't recently, just because I feel like a lot of the big players haven't really embraced it since it launched. That's why it was Microsoft is, I guess, finally taking the plunge, and Adobe, so that'll probably help. But that'll be interesting to see how Microsoft, I know I don't have experience with Adobe much, but I do. I have used Microsoft Office, and that has its own update infrastructure, as one example. That will they have to get rid of, say, Microsoft? Will they get rid of Microsoft Auto Update so they can satisfy the App Store? So all the updates come through there, or will it be in a? Will they sell these apps in a bundle like they do currently with Microsoft Office? Or because they said something today about Microsoft Office 365 coming to the Mac App Store. I don't know what that if that has something to do with the subscription, what, you know, what specifically people can do with that app that's being sold in the App Store, you know, as it relates to the Office 365 subscription.
I would assume it's similar to how it is in iOS now, so you can buy the subscription to 365 through the app.
Like an in-app subscription.
I would, that'd be my guess.
That's pretty much what I got too, is I always welcome simplification, especially if it's something familiar that we're already used to with the iOS App Store. So any changes to make it more appearances like that. And the whole thing of the App Store, I didn't find it as easy as it could be. Yes, it's doable, but I thought it was a little more complicated than it needed to be. So I think this simplification is what the behind here. And this sounds really so similar to the Windows Microsoft, the Microsoft Windows App Store they have now, where they're really focusing on that App Store, where they want you to get the apps from the App Store because it's certified and verified. And I think this is their way of cutting down on viruses and where you're getting it from, but it's still a computer. So just like the Mac, we're still able to download freely outside of the App Store. And so this is Apple's push to kind of compete with the Microsoft App Store, which is the same concept.
I think it needed an overhaul as well. Browsing the Mac App Store wasn't much fun, I don't think, currently. Mm-hmm. So I think it's good that they've got these new tabs for, to make
sort of
finding things a bit easier.
It can make it way easier. Yeah, I agree.
The one thing I thought they might do, which I didn't hear mention of anyway, is paid upgrades, which has been one of the criticisms of the Mac. Because, you know, those more expensive computer apps, often you might pay, say, $100 for it. And then when they bring out a new version in a year or two's time, if you had the previous version, you can buy the upgrade for 20 or 30, which the Mac App Store doesn't have that kind of ability to do. So that'd be the one part of it that I thought we might see also. But yeah, I think on the whole, I'm not surprised that to see them pushing the Mac App Store, and yeah, I think it's a good move. So guys, we've got those four new operating systems coming out. We'll have iOS 12, we'll have Mac OS Mojave, we'll have Watch OS 5, and TV OS 12.
There's one missing. Did you notice that?
HomePod?
Yes.
HomePod OS.
Believe it. I was waiting. I was thinking, the HomePod has its own OS, and it did not get a mention. And I will be frank, I was totally surprised and shocked, because I figure if any OS that needs a significant boost to help their sales would be a new HomePod OS. I was just stunned.
I wonder, are they, I think Dave or Thomas, one of you guys mentioned it earlier on today in the podcast. I wonder if they're looking at doing a separate HomePod event to really try to give it its own space and to talk about an international release. I wonder, was that done purposely?
Could be.
I don't know. It wouldn't make any sense though, Stuart. I mean, that would make like, well, let's just emphasize the Apple Watch, or let's just emphasize on Mac on a different day along with the Mac announcement. So it seems like WWDC, the whole point of WWDC is a developer conference that involves OSs of the different various devices. And so that's what really surprised me. Now, I can understand why they didn't do any hardware revealing today, because they do that sometimes. Like Tyler was saying earlier, is that sometimes in October we may have an exclusive Mac keynote that has all the new Macs. But when it comes to OS, I was thoroughly surprised.
Yeah, I wasn't massively surprised, but I could have seen it. But I'm wondering as well, maybe I didn't think they would do it yet, but at some point will they do something along the lines of Amazon Skills, you know, for HomePod? And that would very much fit with WWDC if they were going to go that direction, to allow kind of developers to create those kinds of things. So someday, maybe. These upgrades, they'll all be available in the autumn. It's usually around September or sometimes into October for the Mac, I believe. Is that right? There will be There certainly are. The developers can download the betas from today. There wasn't a mention of a public beta, but I assume there will be a public beta, which usually follows a few weeks behind for those who want it. Isn't that right?
Yeah, usually early July, I think you get the public beta.
Yeah.
No, I think it's the third beta. Beta number three. I think that's when they open it up.
Yeah. Last year, it was the second beta at the end of June. But I think it can be a little unpredictable.
Yeah.
I think the year before that, I was third, and then it was, you know, sometimes they push it into July. So I guess it just depends on how stable they can make
it. How it's going, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll see it goes. I'll be on one of them anyway, and looking forward to it. Do anyone, guys, do you want to give a quick final thought, Stuart, on the event today?
Yeah, I suppose one very general comment. I thought it was an interesting gender balance today. In terms of the presenters, just completely off curve here, just in terms of male, female, good gender balance. But yeah, look, I thought it was good. It didn't completely disappoint. Nothing madly that we were not expecting, I suppose. I'm certainly excited with some of the iOS features that we've mentioned earlier. Notably some of the workflow things. And I suppose if I was living in the US, I would be more excited about Apple TV. So Thomas and Tyler, I'm sure we'll have great fun in the next year or two.
Great stuff. Thanks, Stuart. Tyler, any last thoughts?
Well, one little thought on macOS Mojave that was sort of a passing mention during the keynote was that he said something like legacy plugins will not be supported. So does that mean current plugins like Flash Player have been deprecated for some time, but if they're not supported anymore, does that mean Safari will completely ditch support mode? And is that to pressure websites that, rare as they are, some do still request access to Flash, even if their mobile apps don't? Sometimes their websites are a little behind the curve. So I wonder what that will mean if indeed it is no longer possible to run Flash on macOS Mojave, if these websites will need to use alternative means like HTML5 if they want to be able to continue to let customers on their Macs stream content. And the only other commentary I have, and it's becoming increasingly, or the silence is becoming deafening on this, is the air power. They introduced that in September. Yes. And we haven't heard anything. Like, what's the deal? Their next event, that's September, that's a year off.
And are they going to re-announce it in September? That's what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, so unless there's some kind of event or just a product update that they can announce via press release, it's going to be a year, introduced in September 17, finally release in 18. That's a year from launch to release.
Yeah, something's gone wrong in the background there, I'm guessing, so... that's a good point and an interesting one. And Thomas, what were your overall impressions to sum us all up?
I'm with Stuart. I think overall I'm not disappointed, but I'm also not like terribly wowed either. I think there were some new things that were certainly noteworthy. I am glad to see like the Siri shortcut workflow. I'm really excited about. So there's a few things in the iOS I'm happy about. The speed is going to be a great thing. So I think it wasn't disappointing, but it was kind of what I expected. It was a so-so thing. Like Tyler, I can understand the iPhone SE 2 not being announced, the Mac updates, the iPad Pro. I can get that, but I'm with him. This air power. Where is it? It's like, oh my gosh, you missed it again. It's like, It makes me wonder where, if they're having a lot more problem than they anticipated or something, and we have not heard anything about it. They're having technical difficulties with it, but that was a shocker there. And yes, I am very excited about my Apple TV. When the Spectrum aspect comes out this fall, I certainly will give it a try. I am anxious to do that. I will be very excited about that. The Apple Watch, I thought there was a few things that were pretty cool in there. And You know, the Mac is the only one I was kind of like,
I think it's so mature that it's often the case with Mac at this point, isn't it? It's such a mature, much more mature operating system than the other ones that maybe there's less things to go for.
Yeah, I mean, there seem to be a lot more eye candy things for people with sight than there were for something, you know, like you said before, like, yeah, there's a lot of mainstream stuff that we both can use, but it seems like on the Mac it was lesser. I don't know. But the App Store was kind of cool. That was barely, I think, is well deserved to be needed. I think that's a big one for me.
Definitely agree with you there. And I agree with the overall, actually, the iOS and Watch and everything. I mean, it wasn't one of those absolutely groundbreaking years, maybe, but it was, I think there's some really, it's good to hear, you know, it's good that they're going to focus on performance and hopefully bugs and things like that as well over the summer. And that there's some interesting, cool little features as well that I'm looking forward to as well. Mm-hmm. And the Watch, you know, Watch is my priority hardware-wise this year. I'm still running an original Apple Watch, so I'm looking forward to getting a new watch with that, with those new features this year. So
now, as always, you know, there's going to be hundreds of new little, small little features that they tweaked and things within the Mac and the iPhone and that didn't get mentioned. So as the summer goes on, and more rumor comes out, I have no doubt there's going to be a lot of little under the hood new changes. I think we're going to say, oh, this is cool. This is cool. So I do expect those.
And definitely keep an eye on AppleViz, because anything that goes public about those kinds of announcements that filter out and closer to the iPhone event and everything like that as well, you know, we'll have probably loads of information and loads to look forward to, like you say, yeah. So, guys, thanks so much for joining me tonight. Thomas, where can people find your work and your social media and things like that?
You guys can always email me at thomas@applevis.com. Thomas is thomas@applevis.com. I really like people following me on Twitter. If you want to, it's thomas_dombill. It's D as in Donald, O, M's in Mickey, V as in Vicky, ILLE. So thomas_dombill.
Great stuff. And the AppleViz Unleashed monthly podcast, of course.
Absolutely. We do a monthly podcast on the Unleashed. It just kind of gives you an overview of the different various Apple news during that month. You can check those podcasts out called the Unleashed. And you can also email us at unleashed@appleviz.com.
Great stuff. And Tyler, you're on Twitter and so on, I believe.
Yes. At TDS0615. That's T as in Tango, D as in Delta, S as in Sierra, 0615. And of course, I could be contacted through the AppleViz form.
Absolutely. And you'll be hard at work on the Mac over the summer.
Yes.
And Stuart,
I have both Mac and iOS testing.
Absolutely.
So I can be testing both.
Yeah, we're the NCBI Technology Podcast. We produce podcasts monthly, usually around the first of the month. So our June episode has just gone live, and you can get it at www.ncbi.ie/technologypodcast if you'd like to subscribe. And I'm available on Twitter at Stuart Lawler. That's StuartLawler.
Great stuff. And I again am Dave Nason. You can find me on Twitter at DavidNason1, DavidN for November, ASON1. And again, on AppleViz Extras going forward, hopefully as well. So thanks, guys, for joining me. And thanks to everyone for listening. And let's all look forward to the autumn and these great new updates. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the AppleViz Extra. To learn more about us, visit our website at www.applevis.com. Follow us on Twitter @AppleViz and like us on Facebook.